I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Along with Amy Donaldson, I'm Jason Lee. On this episode, we are joined by author and attorney Mitch Velos, and we're going to discuss some Second Amendment issues. This is kind of based on what's been going on this week, including legislation proposed by Joseph Biden and his administration, as well as some executive orders that actually, are going to go into effect. And this is kind of in response to a spate of deadly shootings across the country. But Mitch, I wanted to, if you could, can you talk a little bit about your background? And I know you're an author and you've been involved in, kind of the legislative process with regard to Second Amendment issues.
I have. I've been practicing law, primarily injury law, for over 40 years now, and a little over 15 years ago, I wrote the first book because I started getting concerned about Second Amendment issues. I wrote the Utah gun law book, and now we're in our fifth edition. And after we wrote that, and I saw that the chapter on self-defense wasn't as in detail as I would have liked it to be, my son and I...
Uh-oh, you lost him.
Putting together the self-defense...
I'm sorry, one more time. I'm sorry. You said your son and I were doing what now?
We put together a book addressing the self-defense laws of all 50 states because self-defense is such a touchy issue. And prior to that, I had had I represented Superdale Shanzi in his brandishing case.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys remember that.
But, what, can you kind of remind us what that was?
I don't know if you remember Superdale. He was a computer executive who advertised on television and radio. And
we love you. That's right.
He had kind of a brash advertising style. And incidentally, he was very honorable with me. He retained me to defend him in a charge. He was taking his daughter up onto the South Mountain where they hang glide. And some residents accosted him. And he wasn't sure what their intentions were, so he drew his concealed weapon and held it at what we call low ready, and he was charged with brandishing. And I defended that case. It was we successfully defended the brandishing charge. He was found not guilty.
I got a quick Dale Shanzi story. So locally, he's like you said, he owned that computer business and he had these great commercials. But I remember one of the stories when I was working for KSL Radio. I actually went over to he owned at the time, I can't remember a gun range and store.
Yeah, and, totally and awesome gun.
Totally awesome. Thank you. I could not think of that for the life of me. So I went over there and he let me shoot a little bit. That was one of the first times I've ever. I've only shot at that time maybe once or twice before that, and he was a great shot. Obviously, he was pretty good with it. But he was nice to me. So I got a good sense from him.
Yeah, it was a different personality off the television advertising platform.
So with regard to these things that are going on, and especially what we see now is some of these issues facing, just guns, and we often seem to react when bad things happen, which isn't necessarily good because that's typically not – you should be doing this not in, irrationally but in a rational sense so that you can be as logical as possible and try to you know, see things as clearly as possible. I don't know that's always the way this is done. What do you think of – I want to, some of the executive orders that President Biden put out. I know one of them basically he's trying to figure out ways to prevent – what he does prevent some of these incidents from happening. But I don't know that, you know, those things are necessarily going to happen considering some of the, you know, the actions taking place most recently.
Hey, Jason, yeah, can we just I'm sorry to jump in, Mitch, but I just really want to quickly say what the executive orders were yesterday. They touched on ghost guns. Ghost guns, firearms without serial numbers that are sold in kits. He directed the Justice Department to draft a new rule regulating a device that can be put on a pistol to turn it into a short barrel rifle. And he also asked the Justice Department to create templates that states can use to enact red flag laws, which are that allows a judge to seize firearms from people who they determine are a threat to themselves or others. And then I believe he
there
also
was an
ordered
for the gun trafficking study. They want to reinstate that one. That help police determine, you know, the source of guns used in crimes.
Yeah, and so just that's a super quick overview of it. I think people were surprised he didn't address the liability shield. We're going to talk about all these things throughout this podcast, but just give us sort of your initial reaction to yesterday's executive orders.
Well, like most gun control attempts, and this is my opinion, they don't work, and... it's certainly not about safety. For example, if you look at the threat to pass another assault weapons ban, we had assault weapons ban for 10 years from 1994 to 2004, and the statistics showed that it had no appreciable effect on homicides. So, and then the ghost, I can go through every one of these. I mean, it's just not going to help.
Can I just ask you, I know it didn't have an impact on the homicide rate, but what about mass shootings?
I'm not sure. I mean, mass shootings have increased. It was interesting. Last year, we had no mass shootings. If you define mass shootings, and that was 2020. If you define mass shootings as the shooting by a stranger with no connections to the victims, there weren't any. And all of a sudden, you know, this year now we have had two or three of those.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's a really good explanation. I mean, if you just happen to kill eight members of your family, that's a mass shooting. Now, the fact that you happen to know them shouldn't, you know, change the definition of that. I think it's just as tragic. And again, I'm not one of these gun control people, actually. I own a gun, and I'm kind of with you on that. But I think it's kind of unfair to suggest that just because you don't know them that you would categorize, you know, one thing that is actually the exact same act as different from the other one.
Well, you know, that's a domestic violence issue, really, and that has been a problem. But, you know, people commit domestic violence in many ways, mm-hmm. poison, firebombs, you know, I mean, if they don't have guns, then they're going to do it. Knives, As far as the statistics go, I mean, for example, assault rifles, which are a very important part of our national defense, assault rifles that are much more powerful than AR-15s and AK-47s are sold by the United States Army to citizens between the ages of 17 and 45 as a vital segment of our national defense, and that's been the case for a long time. I mean, they're considered the unorganized militia, and they're expected to have military-style weapons.
Mm-hmm, but I have a question on that, because I just read...
1 minute.
I know, 6 months ago, the militia is actually the National Guard now. So we don't need an unorganized militia to defend our country. We have our military.
Actually, if you look at federal law and state law, we have an unorganized militia still on the books.
Yeah, but I mean, there's plenty of things that are on the books that aren't necessarily useful anymore.
Well, but you're not going to.
If you, for example, you look at Israel, almost everybody's armed, and they've pretty much eliminated mass shootings by counsel by the leaders to have citizens carrying pistols, the people that have pistol permits, to carry them at all times. They've pretty much eliminated mass shootings. And that's been the problem all along. You see a lot of these mass shootings, 98% of them are in gun-free zones where citizens have been disarmed. And that was never the intent of the founding fathers. So, you know, it's just, it creates a victim rich grounds to commit mass murder. People that create gun-free zones, it's a reckless policy, in my humble opinion.
When we come back, I want to continue this discussion because you bring up a lot of interesting points here. I would still like to kind of continue down the road and like you say, have you identify some of these things. And I think Amy wants to talk about, shield laws, too. We're speaking today with author and attorney Mitch Vilos about Second Amendment issues, kind of in the wake of President Biden issuing a number of executive orders to what he believes may somehow, mitigate people using guns in violent ways. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but we'll talk about it and hopefully provide some insightful information. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee with Amy Donaldson. Speaking today with author and attorney Mitch Vilos, we're discussing Second Amendment issues kind of in the wake of legislation and executive orders proposed by the Biden administration to kind of as a reaction to what's been happening with some mass shootings that have been going on across the country. You know, Mitch, you mentioned in the last segment, speaking, for instance, in Israel, where everyone has the opportunity to carry a firearm. And in some ways, I'm with you because I'm a person who has a gun and I actually have a concealed carry permit, though I don't, carry all the time or anything. But,
you don't have to apologize to me.
No, I'm with you. I don't believe me. I am not apologetic.
But he's just letting other people know. Don't be afraid of me.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm black. They're
he's a black man
yeah.
in Utah. So he has to make that distinction.
I got to preface everything by saying that. So. What I do worry about, though, for instance, I took the FBI Citizens Academy. And in that Citizens Academy, they give you, like, scenarios, for instance. And one of the things they talked about was what happened at Virginia Tech. And you could use this, like, for instance, if you were in any situation where there was a crowd of people, and oftentimes these criminals who are perpetrating these horrific instances of, mass murder, they look like you and me. They're not dressed necessarily in fatigues or... like back in the day when they would wear these goth clothes. I mean, and on occasion that would happen. But generally speaking, like the high school kid that did the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida, they look like us. The kid at Virginia Tech was a student. He looked like everybody else. So if everybody's got a gun, you don't necessarily know who the bad guy is. Well, Juan Pierre used to say that ridiculous thing about the only thing that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. That was always a dumbass thing to say. Because you don't know who the bad guys are just by looking at them. So don't you worry or do you have any concern about the fact that even in Israel, where it may have some effectiveness, in our culture, where we're a little more cowboy than they seem to be, that there would be some danger in having everybody have a gun?
No. An armed society is a peaceful society generally, especially in the United States. I mean, if you look, for example... In my city, Centerville, I think we have more guns than people.
That's America and, right there, man. There are more guns than people, right?
Yeah, and Centerville's even more heavily armed than your average place in the United States. And we've never had a murder since 2001, since the citydata.com was keeping track. We had a homicide that initiated with a carjacking outside of Centerville, outside of Davis County, and the man went up onto a freeway ramp and tragically T-boned a young lady who was going through a green light, and they charged him with murder initially, but it had nothing to do with guns. And then, you know, it was settled as a automobile homicide. But that's the only murder charge that I'm aware of in Centerville since 2001. And I've lived here since 1990, and I'm not aware of any murders in Centerville.
And you think that's in direct correlation to everybody being, potentially being armed?
I think that has some effect. If you look at, for example, Vermont, you don't need a permit to carry concealed. You know, they have a high incidence of people carrying guns. They're consistently one of the lowest murder rates in the country. Utah is always among the lowest five as far as murder rates. And so you start disarming citizens, you create a problem. You create an attraction to defenseless victims, especially for mass shootings. The theater shooting in Denver area a few years ago, the only theater that had a no weapons sign in a 6-mile radius was the one that the mass murderer chose to inflict the casualties in. So, you know, not only Trolley Square, for example, Trolley Square, I think they still have a no weapons sign. I think it's a reckless policy. It just sends the wrong message to crazy people who want to create havoc.
Well, let me jump in on this idea that 98% of the shootings happen in gun-free zones, because I've looked that up because I've heard it before a couple years ago, and it's actually not true. The federal government, the FBI, and the Department of Justice define a mass shooting as one continuous action where four people or more are killed with a gun, with a weapon, right?
A Brady Center's definition.
No, it's the crime stats. I looked it up when we had this discussion a few years ago, and so I was like, well, what is a mass shooting? And I've never heard the thing about being related or not related, and that's an interesting component that I don't know about. But I did look up this 98% is in gun-free zones, because as of now, I mean, if you look at concerts, there's really no place in our society where we haven't had a mass shooting. We've had them at grocery stores. We've had them at in bars. We've had it at that. I mean, the country music concert, I remember reading an interview with I'm a huge country music fan, where they said there were more guns in that crowd than, you know, anywhere. And they were useless because the guy's up in a, you know, a hotel window with a weapon that probably the military would only have been an effective tool, you know, to reply to. So I think my problem with gun debate or gun discussion is that we can't even really agree on facts. And so I understand what happened yesterday with Joe Biden. And I even told Jason, like, oh, I don't know if I want to keep talking about guns, because I am not an advocate of people not being able to get guns. I just don't see the problem with a background check. I'm not a fan of registration, but I think if you're going to have an AR-15 or an AK-47, you should register it.
Why?
Because we have to register a car. Because we have to. We have to have insurance.
So is a driving is a privilege. A gun is a right.
To me, having an AK-47 and an AR-15 is a privilege. Having something to defend yourself.
No, it's totally different. I'm disagreeing.
And that's fine. But I'm saying, for me, these are sort of like do background checks. Close loopholes at gun shows. I don't like waiting periods. I think if you just look at like what causes the problem and what could solve the problem, some of these things I do think are helpful. Some of the things that he signed are not helpful. One question I'd love for your insider opinion on is this idea of the liability shield. Like, why should gun manufacturers be protected why can't victims sue?
You got 2 minutes.
Okay. Victims of defective guns can sue all day long. If the gun is defective, it blows up in your face, you can do that. The only reason they protected the manufacturers is because it's from guns being misused. In other words, you don't allow a lawsuit against General Motors because someone took an automobile and ran into a crowd and killed a number of people. That's just not done. It's not even considered. But with guns, the trial lawyers, and I'm one of them, but trial lawyers have pushed it to the point where they're blaming gun manufacturers for guns being used for what they were intended to do. And for guns being used for not what they were intended to do. They were intended to be used for self-defense, not for murder. And there's not a gun manufacturer in the country that intends for his product to be used in a murder. It's the same with car manufacturers.
I would suggest
car manufacturers and gun manufacturers being treated the same. But you can still sue, and that's a false statement. It's overly broad when President Biden says that they can't be sued. That's not true. You can sue a gun manufacturer for a defective product.
So is it not true that there are shield laws? Because there's not shield laws for car manufacturers. That, I mean, like you say, people just don't do it. But there are actually legal protections for gun manufacturers that are really difficult for victims to overcome.
What are you talking about? People don't get killed by cars? I mean,
No, but they're not used to kill as much as
No. What I mean is, there aren't statutes that actually protect the car makers. It just doesn't happen, right? Like, so what I've read about the shield laws is that people who are attempting to sue gun manufacturers, it's almost impossible because there are federal laws that protect those manufacturers. But these don't exist in, like you say, in other areas because trial lawyers don't sue they don't sue General Motors or Ford or whatever. So there are not those same legal protections. See what I'm saying?
So, Mitch, I'm going to let you answer that. I just want to start because we've gone a little bit long. When we come back, we'll have him answer that question about these shield laws. And again, I think he raises a good point. We're trying to be fair about all of these laws that we enact. We also have to think about them in a reasonable fashion. We're speaking today with author and attorney Mitch Vilos, talking about Second Amendment issues and gun control. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, speaking today with Mitch Vilos. He's an attorney and author, and we're talking today about Second Amendment issues. Amy brought up in the last segment, Mitch, some of these shields, and you kind of used the analogy that, you know, there are car manufacturers don't have necessarily laws that preclude them from being able to manufacture, and they're not held responsible for if somebody uses them in a criminal fashion. And Amy's idea was that it was interesting to her that there are no laws, that there are laws trying to protect gun manufacturers. And so we wanted to get your opinion on as to what you think of that and why that might be the case.
The fact is, I mean, Amy, you talk about the facts. The car manufacturers have not been sued by trial lawyers for mass murder with automobiles. If they were, there probably would be a law passed because just like with guns, because trial lawyers are now suing gun manufacturers or tried to sue for the guns being misused.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
That's the only difference. It's the only difference. It's what the trial lawyers have done. If the trial lawyers start to sue car manufacturers for misuse of the automobile to commit murder, you're going to see a federal law that prohibits that.
Oh.
And rightfully so.
So, but let me ask you as a lawyer, would that be appropriate? Because my understanding was that there's legal protection for gun manufacturers, distributors, and dealers because it's a constitutionally protected right. Driving a car, as Jason points out, is not a constitutionally protected right.
Soon as you see trial lawyers start suing car manufacturers for murders, there's going to be protection. They haven't done that yet, so there wasn't a need for a federal statute. Now there's a need for a federal statute because clever trial lawyers are trying to hold gun manufacturers responsible for the acts of murderers misusing their product, and that's wrong.
Yeah, I can't argue that.
And so I was wondering what your thoughts are on, like, this idea that we would outlaw certain types of guns. Like I said, I think having an AR-15 should be legal, but you should have to register and have insurance for it. Jason bristled at that. I'm just wondering your thoughts on that.
Well, my thoughts are, first of all, if you're talking about AR-15s and AK-47s, they're nothing as powerful, not nearly as powerful as M1s and M1As mm-hmm. that the United States Army has been mandated by federal law to sell to members of the militia, which is defined as the unorganized militia, every citizen between the ages of 17 and 45. And of course, the organized militia is the National Guard, and they clearly have not only semi-automatic rifles, they have automatic rifles. They have units that have cannons and tanks and airplanes.
But the average citizen, though, cannot have a tank or a rocket launcher, you know.
No, that's the difference between right. the organized militia and the unorganized militia. The unorganized militia is intended to also defend the United States from insurrections, foreign despots, defend against tyranny, etc. We were intended by the founding fathers to be an armed citizenry, just like Israel, just like Switzerland. I served my LDS mission in Switzerland. Virtually every home has a machine gun in Switzerland. Their murder rate is extremely low. You just don't break into a home in Switzerland. You shouldn't break into a home in Centerville either, because it's very, very dangerous to do that.
What I think is funny about that is Switzerland is famously neutral when it comes to, you know, national issues and getting into wars, yet what otherwise would seem to be a pretty, I mean, as you point out, it's a very non-violent country just in general. They don't have a whole lot of crime, certainly not violent crime, and everybody has a gun.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's it.
So I was why can't we like have good discussions and come to like middle ground on this? Like, why is it all or nothing? Like, it's ban this or everybody gets a 50 guns? Or why can't it their discussion kind of be more like what's something everyone can? Because I know a lot of people believe a background check is not an unreasonable thing for gun owners to have to put themselves through, but I know gun owners who are opposed to that, and they really there just doesn't seem to be an ability, especially amongst lawmakers, to have sort of normal civil discussions about, like, what would you accept or what would... Because, I mean, I do think they should be regulated in some way.
Well, then, should we regulate your free speech?
I can't yell fire at a theater. But I can shoot up for a theater, right?
I can't say I want to kill the president and not have the Secret Service on my doorstep the next day.
Yeah, so I mean, there are limits to everything, but some people seem to think there's no limit to the Second Amendment, and I think I don't accept that, even though I'm pretty liberal. It doesn't seem like it in this conversation, but I'm pretty liberal compared to you two. I don't love all the executive action. I hate executive action, as Jason knows, and I've said on this podcast, because I think this is something that Congress should address. This is not something that should be done through executive action. But I think the reason they're having this done through executive action is because we just can't even debate it in our Congress. And I just know, as a person who's been in this 40 years, why do you think we just can't like discuss and maybe come to some kind of compromises?
Well, have you read the findings of the Parkland Commission? You mentioned the Parkland High School, mm-hmm. which was a gun-free zone, essentially, except for one cowardly deputy that decided not
get
into the fray.
That's right.
Their conclusion was that teachers who have permits should be allowed to carry concealed. Utah's had teachers and school employees unequivocally allowed by law since 1997, if they have a concealed weapons permit in Utah, to carry a concealed weapon in Utah schools. 1997, we haven't had one coworker or one student injured as a result of that policy. That should say something.
Yeah, and I think teachers should be able to carry, especially with the schools kind of becoming more of a target. I also think they're responsible if anything bad happens. But the other thing that we had a superintendent on our show a couple years ago, and he mentioned to us that laws forbid them from being able to tell law enforcement, say there is a lockdown or an mm-hmm. issue at a school. They can't let law enforcement know, hey, Mr. Green, the science teacher, is armed and able to help from the inside out, right? Like, so they're not allowed to disclose that information. So I think there are issues in our governing, but we just can't even talk about it. Like, it seems
we have talked about it. And for example, a lot of the schools that I'm aware of, and I've been asked to teach a higher level of concealed carry to school employees, and the encouragement was to make sure that law enforcement, and it goes through the resource officer, they know who's armed. Yes, it's not mandatory for you to disclose that you're an armed citizen in a school zone, but generally speaking, it's nice for those who do carry to know that they're not to be considered a target. And so you've had schools discussing it, Amy, just like you're talking about, which is a very healthy thing, and I agree with you on that. We need to have the discussion. And in the schools that I'm aware of, the resource officer and the local police know which teachers or including lunch ladies probably.
Sure.
And janitors, maintenance men. You know, there are a lot of those people in Utah that are armed, and rightfully so. And it's look at the safety statistics on that. I mean, not one injury to a coworker, not one injury to a student. That's got to say something about gun-free zones.
Well, let me ask you.
I need
you
to close
the
hold on before we get
okay,
to the next
sorry, sorry, sorry.
It's okay.
I know.
When we come back, Amy is going to get the first question, and I also wanted to bring up the idea that guns aren't the problem. People are the problem, and I want to kind of talk about that a little bit more, too. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, Amy Donaldson and Jason Lee. On this episode, we're joined by author and attorney Mitch Velos. He's helping us discuss Second Amendment issues and has been an expert on these kinds of things and dealt with civil legislation with regard to gun issues. You know, Mitch, Amy, I'm one of those people, you know, that even in my house, I was kind of the lone voice because my parents used to tell me how, you know, they thought guns were kind of nutty. But it's in the fabric of our country. It was how we took the country from the Native Americans, actually. So it is as American as the flag to me. But I also think that since there are more guns than people, it is obvious that the vast majority, except for some small, less than 1% of the population who use them for criminal activity, the rest of us use them, except those people down in Cedar City or Iron County who shot themselves. But that was poor management of their firearms at a gun range. Generally speaking, we, just like cars, we treat them well. We treat them with the reverence that they deserve because they are deadly weapons, potentially. But otherwise, they're just tools. If you lay it on a table, that gun does not fire itself. Doesn't matter if it's an AR or a 22 or a Glock. They all just sit there until the operator puts it in their hand and does something to it, generally speaking. So I never feel like we take that into account. We go to this irrational point where we say the guns are the problem because they're not the ones committing the crime. The guns aren't. They may use those tools to do it. But it's the people who we should address that in ourselves. To me, to figure out why are we as a society so much more violent than some other places? Not every place, but some other places. Your thoughts?
I'm going to let Mitch go first. Do you want to go first, Mitch, or do you have?
Well, you know, I hate to bring this in, but culture, subcultures have some bearing on this. And I don't know why it is. For example, in urban areas, here I'm going to get involuntarily political, mostly places controlled by Democrats, you have horrendous crime rates.
I'm going to stop you right
even
for
among
a
youth,
hold on for a second.
You know,
why did you do that? Like, why bring Democrat or Republican in that?
It's just a fact.
But it's not a fact. There are plenty of Republicans in places where gun violence takes place. Florida is one of them. And Florida has a ton of those things. Arizona.
Well, look at Texas.
Texas is a Republican state up and down.
I mean, I do think.
So I'm not saying one is worse than the other, but I just don't understand why you did that.
I think I don't think gun violence is political. I think extremists and mass shootings definitely are carried out much more by far right people. The other thing is, I do think Mitch should be able to say what he believes
or
feels,
right? I'm sorry about that.
And so
no,
if that's
I,
how
don't
you see it, yeah.
No, yeah. You make a point, Jason. And, but I look at Utah. Look at Utah. I mean, I go through the Deseret News listing of homicides in Utah after every year, trying to figure out, why is this happening? And I look at where the homicides in Utah are occurring, in Salt Lake County.
But isn't that where all the people are?
Well, yeah. I mean, I do think the population centers tend to be. But you have to look. I think inner city violence is much more complicated than...
I hate to term inner city as a black person, by the way, y'all.
Well, but it's white people, too. I mean, it's my... Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's
I,
not what they
I
mean.
Have...
That's, it's like a song.
Well, I know.
We all know what they mean when they say...
But no. But I'm saying that when you have people living in high-density situations and you have poverty, you enter in poverty, there's a lot... It's much more complicated than guns.
It may even be the the lemming effect, where you have I don't know, maybe that has something to do with it. I'd love to see a psychologist's take on urban violence. It is a lot more complicated than that. And
they've done studies on the layouts of cities and the ways in which people live and are forced to into high poverty situations, and so I think those things contribute somewhat to like armed robberies and things that maybe someone's using a weapon to commit those crimes. But so I think the other thing is, I like a red flag law. I know lots of lawyers who hate red flag laws because a judge is making that determination. But my problem is this: guns are they're just such a final thing. You guys say they're just tools, but they're such an effective tool. They are so, completely good at what they're designed to do, that if somebody is having suicidal thoughts and there's a gun in the house, they're three times more likely to follow through on committing suicide. Mm-hmm. And so I think when I look at the rise of mass shootings, I see a real dearth of mass shootings between 1994 and 2004, and then they've done nothing but rise since. And so I just want us to be able to talk about this and say, maybe we don't want to live in a society where you can go to the grocery store and you lose your life because you just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. I don't see everybody packing heat as an answer, because there are some people that I don't want shooting my direction. They don't practice. They are not responsible. You guys talked about how you see it as a responsibility and a sanctity. I was raised around guns. My dad is a police officer. He taught me to shoot when I was before I can really even ride a bike. I was shooting at cans with my dad. And I'm saying everyone doesn't have that experience. And we were reckless with those guns. We darn near had an accident when I was a kid. I feel like people don't treat them with sanctity. They don't treat them carefully. And I really think we need to have a real, we need to get real with ourselves about our own gun culture. And I don't think we are capable of that in this moment. And I don't know what will change, but I don't think a bunch of executive orders... I was very frustrated by this because I feel like it's just more polarizing. Anyway, that's my two cents.
And maybe unconstitutional as well. I mean, I
probably. It's probably. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you. It's probably unconstitutional.
So, Mitch, I'm going to give you the last word. If you thought you feel like you could help these legislators and the president provide actual protections against violence in society, what do you think? What would you suggest?
I would suggest that they give serious thought to what our founding fathers intended for our society to be, and it was intended to be an armed society, just like we have in Centerville or in Utah. Don't disarm the intended victims, and to encourage people. I mean, now we have the permitless carry in Utah. We're going to have, with permits, we had one out of every six adults had a concealed weapon permit. Now, like you, that doesn't mean they're all going to be carrying it at every time, but at least there are probably going to be people that are there to help stop the attack. And I'll tell you, Amy, I've looked at try to read the blow-by-blow for all these mass shootings. And when you have a mass shooting, you generally have people moving away from the shooter, and he becomes a pretty clear target. So, I mean, I don't recall ever reading about a case where a person was shot during a mass shooting by a defender and being sued.
You're right about this lawsuit part, but I just know reading about the Trolley Square shooting, I think there was this issue of adrenaline, right? Even for a trained police officer. I mean, my dad's philosophy on guns, I almost got a gun when I was young and single, and he said, look, I don't want you to have a weapon, even though he's a believer in them, because he said, if you're not willing to use it to kill somebody, it will be used against you. So I don't...
It could be,
you know,
yeah, that was good advice.
He encouraged me to get a dog instead, which I did. But
which is that again and again and again.
No, but I do think that if we're going to have lots of guns running around society, like, I think training at a gun... We need to make things so affordable and free, because I think some of the people who are most susceptible to gun violence are, like, women in a domestic violence situation. We need to rethink the gun culture the way it is, because right now I see the people with the guns as the people who are making us more afraid, and they're not involved in the solutions. They're just stoking this fear, and not all of them, but I just feel like that's kind of our polarized language right now. But if we started, I heard an interview with a woman who's LGBTQ, and she was saying, there's a reason the pink pistols, and she was saying, she made some really valid points, and I think we have to think about things a little differently, and I think we have to take into consideration that there are people who don't want to be around guns. My husband hates guns. He's been a defense lawyer for 43 years, and he wants nothing to do with guns. So he shouldn't be required to carry a weapon if, you know, other people, you know. I just think we have to kind of rethink this discussion, and if we find... the problem I have with mass shootings driving this is I hate that we make a decision about the worst case scenario. I know we have to consider it, but I think that more people die from killing themselves or their loved ones with a gun than die in the mass shooting. And it's just that the mass shooting is so terrifying because it can happen anywhere to anyone, and you're not doing anything. You know, you don't have any connection to it. So
Look how the leaders that are proposing these laws are how they take care of their children and grandchildren who go to schools that are protected by men with
mm-hmm.
guns.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm saying, you know, if you want to disarm anyone in the United States as a political leader, first get rid of your armed bodyguards, please, just to be credible.
Right, right. Because otherwise, if you had somebody walking around protecting you, you might not have to carry a gun either.
So, yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So Mitch, what's the name of your book?
The two books. The one is Utah Gun Law. Poncho's Wisdom is kind of the subtitle.
Okay.
It's the entertainment package. It's fun. It's a fun read. And that's available now, our fifth edition, in most of the gun stores that are small ma and pa stores. And then the other book, Self-Defense Laws of All 50 States, I'm now working on the third edition. It's almost sold out, but it is available online. You can get them on Amazon for quite a discount if you purchase it,
okay,
as a e-book.
Excellent. Listen, Mitch Velos, I want to thank you very much for joining us today
and
adding a great deal to our discussion.
So much.
Really appreciate it. Join us again.
Nice to talk to both of you.
You bet. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about our show, please contact us via email at vormed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at ADonSports and at JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and all the other places where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, along with Amy Donaldson, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason. Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.